fit, active, healthy, happy, enjoying the prime of your life. Looking out for your health and wellness, this is Health Talk with Fred Lowry from Lowry Drug in Statesville. Call now to ask Fred your health questions, 704-873-1400, 704-873-1400. You can also visit Fred at his store, conveniently located on Hartness Road in Statesville.
Good afternoon. This is the first day of March. It's a rainy day in 2024. This is Fred Lowry, pharmacist and doctor of natural medicine, and this is Health Talk. This program is intended to share knowledge and information based on my research and experience. It is not intended to offer individual advice, nor does it replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare provider. Your daily choices have more to do with your health than anyone in the healthcare field, and my hopes are that this show will empower you with knowledge to take a more proactive approach to your health. I'm pleased today to have Dr. Sam Stout with Iredell Health Systems with us here. Dr. Stout is practicing in Mooresville. He came to Statesville, I think, to practice in 1979, and I came to Lowry Drug in 1980. So I've known Sam for a number of years when he started here, and over the years we've both of us have seen a number of changes in medicine, and well, the whole world is changing, obviously. So, Sam, welcome. Welcome to Health Talk.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah,
I'm really honored to be here.
I'm glad you're here.
It's going to be fun.
It will be. So, one of the things I'm interested in this year, you became a physician. I don't know where you grew up or anything, but you know, I know something influenced you to get into the field of medicine. And would you kind of give us an overview of that? What that looked like for you?
Well, I grew up in New Jersey, right outside of Princeton. But what got me into medicine really was my father. You know, he in his mid-20s. Developed a disease called sarcoidosis. Sarcoidosis is a terrible disease that attacks every organ, lungs especially. It's limited how far he could walk. It attacked the liver. It attacked the kidneys. It attacked the base of his brain. And, you know, he had multiple hospitalizations in his 20s. And during one of them, when he was 28, he met a young nursing student, who was my mother, and, you know, she dropped out, ended up marrying him, and they tried very hard to have a family. Because of the sarcoid, he was not able to. They adopted a boy in 1950, and then around 1950, a marvelous drug came out called prednisone, which slowed the inflammatory response, and instead of living 6 months like he was told he would, he ended up living 7.5 years and ended up dying in 1959. He had a strong character just to survive all the attacks. You know, he worked every day. He couldn't see. It knocked out his peripheral vision. My mother had to drive him to work. But he worked as a machinist and worked till the day he died.
Wow.
All right, so
that's a very precise job, too.
Yeah, yeah. But he could see up close. He just couldn't see the periphery because, like I said, sarcoid attacks the base of the brain. Well, you're seeing me here, so you see that the prednisone allowed them to have children and ended up having two more, my brother Kevin and my sister Karen. So, you know, he taught me a determination. My mother was just a dedicated soul who showed unconditional love. But after my father's death, I was in a parochial school at the time. My best friend's father was a physician. His name was Dr. Purcell. He had gone through a lot himself, first two wives had died with cancer, and this was his third wife, and they saw what I was I had trouble going through it all after the death of my father. They frequently invited us over to their house. And in fact, later, another 5-6 years in the future, we all were in a rock band together. So I got to spend a lot of time with him. He was an exceptional individual, you know, just as caring. And just the fact that he would take time out of his busy life, you know, to focus on me and encourage me, changed who I was forever.
Oh, yeah.
So around 9th grade, I decided I wanted to be a doctor, which was a good thing because during the 60s and 70s, we know there were lots of other things out there to get you off guard or get you off track. So, you know, when I look at the characters that they had, it helped me to develop my own character and a focus. So,
I think that's one of the things your patients love about you is that you do have that connectivity, that caringness, and you know, also a great skill, you know, for diagnosing problems and figuring things out. And we both know there's only so much one man can do in many cases. That's great. So you went to med school, and where did you go to school? Med school?
University of Miami.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So you moved through that, and was Statesville your first practice site?
Well, you know, again, when you look back, it's 50 years of medicine I've been doing. So my residency in med school, there's a hierarchy to that. You know, your medical students, you know, you're a little higher than dirt. You know, then you have the interns, then you have the residents, and then you have the attendings. So it was like swimming upstream, and you became a trout. You know, your muscles became a lot stronger. So, you know, it also helped with character development. You know, when I look at my residency, we had 14-hour days, and every third night, you know, we were on full all night, admitting anywhere from 5 to 15 people a day. So you had to quickly evaluate the people, and then come up with a plan.
Mm-hmm. I remember doing rotations as a pharmacy student with some of the med students, and I thought, you know, the people in charge of that was a brutal situation sometimes with the way that those individuals were treated and trying to learn. It was tough with the hours that you put in. We didn't have those kind of. We had plenty of hours to study and time and class and all that, but not like y'all had it. You know, it's a little different. This is Health Talk. I'm here with Dr. Sam Stout, and we will be back shortly. Stay tuned.
We'll be back with more of Health Talk with your host, Fred Lowery, right after this short break on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now back to Fred Lowery from Lowery Drug and Health Talk on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Local starts here.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the
Welcome back to Health Talk. We're here with Dr. Sam Stout. So, Sam, we came to Statesville about the same time, and during that time, And of course, the Lowry Drugs across from Arnold Memorial, but we had Davis Hospital, the old Davis Hospital, there. And I remember going over there, and when, you know, I can name most of the doctors on, you know, that were around at that time. You know, many of them are no longer here, of course. So, you know, then Davis moved out to, you know, to their new building. Long story with that, but. So you came here originally with Davis Hospital, I believe.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just finished camping for about 6 months. I was a little burned out after my residency. It was intense. I brought two guitars and a bunch of books, studied for my boards, passed them, and just kept camping. Then all of a sudden, they were closing all the parks down because of winter. And I remember having done a interview there at Davis, so I gave them a call. They gave me a place to stay. They gave me a nurse to take care of and office, and so I came here and been here ever since. And it's really been a lot of fun. You know, and when you stop and look at the early Davis, it was more like a family, and that was really spectacular. And during my residency, a lot of changes had been going on in medicine. You know, when you look at acute cardiac situations, we used to do some compounding right back then, crushing up nitroglycerin, putting them in solution, doing drips, and flopping Swan-Yenz catheters in, and, you know, doing a lot of things. So Fred Marks, myself, and Dr. Lay were all here at the same time. So we helped develop the ICU at Davis. And like I said, we just had an awful lot of fun. But after about a year and a half, I went off on my own, and I also started doing Iredale Hospital. So I had to carry two beepers. You weren't allowed to be on call at the same time at both places. You had to always be within 30 minutes to be able to arrive if there was an emergency. And so I knew every telephone booth in Iredale County. And one of the greatest things that ever happened was when, 1989, I purchased a car that had a phone in it. And it just changed my life. It freed me from those telephone booths.
Times have changed.
Yeah, how times have changed. People most don't know what telephone booths are. But that was that. So when I look at the overall change in the system, first, you look at physicians. You know, when I arrived, there were two cardiologists, two orthopedists, two urologists, one dermatologist, and the rest was primary care. You know, a lot different than it is now. So in internal medicine, we were taught to do it all, which is how I enjoy doing medicine now. Yeah.
Right.
So
would you say that's like family practice now?
Yeah, it really is. Okay. Yeah. And when you look at diagnostic tests, you know, I've definitely lived the history of medicine. While I was in my residency was when the first CAT scan came out. And yeah, in fact, the Beatles actually owned part of the patent on their first CAT scan.
Really?
All right. But besides that, all right. And then ultrasound came out. And then nuclear medicine, you know, all changing things. And then in the 80s, it was the MRIs. So all of a sudden, you know, we were relying more on diagnostic tests and a little bit less on physical exam. And so...
Yeah, that's been a big change because, you know, doctors, I remember years ago, a full exam would take an hour.
Right.
You know, a full medical exam. And now that's changed. I mean, there's not really a physical exam anymore, I don't think, is there?
Oh, yes, there is.
Is there?
Yeah. Okay. You still got to do it. It's well-focused.
It's not in the same way that I think about the old one being.
Right. I don't bring out my reflex hammer.
Right.
But I'll tap a knee with my fingers. Right. I mean, but you still have to do the same diagnostic. Now, before you can even order a scan, you have to be able to document your reasons and justify why you would be ordering it.
Okay.
So, and when you look at medicines, big changes there. We're only the pharmacy. When I started practicing, there are only four medicines that we still use. Everything came out since. You know, all the changes in diabetes and heart disease and.
Yeah, I've seen products come and go, and it's like, you know, well, this is the greatest thing now, and then a new product comes out. Well, now we know more, so this is better, and it just keeps going like that. And then, of course, FDA changes in many things, and controlled substances and combination products. Even you had to prove that. You know, each single thing worked. They could work in combination. So, like all the combination cough syrup, sinus products, all went away. So there's only four left now that you started
right,
out with?
Right. Lasix and hydralazine came back. You know, nitroglycerin and
hydrochlorothiazide.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Everything else new. So fun. To be living the history.
Right.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And of course, obviously there's been big changes in hospitals, Davis has gone through their different things, and Iredell is growing and trying to hang on, particularly since Davis had shut down. I know that's been extremely difficult and a great challenge for the personnel and leadership there. But you know, the two hospitals, they were basically a competing entity. You know,
and a lot of duplication.
Yeah. I'm sure that's the case. So. Moving through this, you know, in terms of, what do you think is better now in medicine, and maybe contrasted with things that maybe have changed, that maybe aren't quite so good. And I've got some speculation on that, but what do you see there?
Well, the cost of medicine has really gone up. You know, and when you're looking at the reasons why, when you look at the 80s, you know, that was when the little private hospitals started being bought up and by hospital corporations. And so like Iredell right now, it's a unique hospital in so much that they're still working on a 3% profit margin. You know, whereas your for-profit hospitals work on an 18%. So that has escalated the cost of medical bills.
Right.
In the 90s, the Clintons were in, and we were afraid of Hillary care. And so, we gave a lot of power to the insurance companies. The insurance companies went from a 7% profit margin to a 45%.
Wow.
So, again, further increasing the cost. In 2000, it was the electronic medical record, which has increased our need for documentation and also has decreased reimbursement. So,
and decreased probably the time that you can actually spend with patients, maybe.
It's very hard to do the documentation. For 35 years, I did both hospital and office practice and did nursing homes. But now in the hospital, the amount of documentation you need, I would be impossible. It would be impossible to do that in a private practice as well. And in the office, the documentation, most physicians, primary care physicians, go home and they spend 2 to 2.5 hours a night documenting on the patients they've seen during that day. You know, I am blessed because I have a scribe that right. helps me to do all that, or I would not be able to keep practicing the way I am. And I see 20 to 25 a day, and I have a great time.
Right. Well, you know, I've talked to nurses in the hospitals, and some of them, and it's not the hospital's fault. It's just the nature of the beast. You know, the time that they have to spend documenting everything certainly takes away from the time they can be with the patient and taking care of them. So that goes back to the requirements, I guess, of the insurance companies to pay for that, along with the legal climate, I would say, of covering the possibilities, so that you're not the target of a lawsuit.
Yeah, and insurance companies can do pretty much what they want. At Iredell, they automatically deny 25 to 35% of all admissions. They do not have to give a reason. They just deny it. Wow. So you have to juggle to figure out how to pay all your costs.
Yeah.
So when you look at your hospital bill and you see how high it is, know there are many reasons.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Well, we're coming up on a hard break. Stay tuned for more with Dr. Sam Stout.
Stay with us. We'll return with more of Fred Lowery and Health Talk in just a moment on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Health Talk continues now. Here's your host, Fred Lowery, on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Local starts here.
Welcome back to Health Talk. This is Fred Lowery, pharmacist and doctor of natural medicine. I'm here with Dr. Sam Stout. We're talking about things, and off the air, we can come up with all kinds of things to talk about, and we'll never be able to cover everything. But so, Sam, we were going back to a previous question, you know, strengths and weaknesses in the medical system. You've seen changes. I've seen changes. You've got a daughter that has gone to med school, and educational systems that are there. You know, there's so many things there. What do you see maybe in the, let's just stop, maybe start with the positive. What do you see with the strengths?
Caught me a little off guard on
you want me to start with the weaknesses?
Yeah, probably. Let me just be honest about it. Talking about my daughter. Okay, so she's done her 4 years of med school, her 3 years internal medicine. She's done 3 years of cardiology. She's now doing electrophysiology. She's 3/4 of a year through. She works 80 to 100 hours a week, being paid $12.50 an hour. She's $300,000 in debt. I paid her all of her college. I paid all of her living expenses during medical school. She paid for medical school and her master's in public health. But, you know, she gets tired, you know.
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, she's up, you know, every other weekend, every third weekend, all weekend, you know, you're never off. I mean, I talked to her earlier in the week. She's been essentially on for the last 33 days, you know, so.
Nobody out there would do that.
Right. I mean, and she's a gifted soul, could have done many things, fluent in Mandarin and a great mind, but, you know, she chose a very difficult field. And in the future, when you look at it, you know, she won't be calling all of her own shots. You know, every time she will want to do a procedure, she'll have it to have it approved by an insurance company. And they're looking only at one thing, and they're looking at cost and how to save money. And it's not really the patient's welfare that I feel they always have in the best mind.
No, everybody knows that.
Yeah. So that way I see it. And what I also see is a lot of physician burnout. You know, with what I've read, primary care it's 40% of them are looking to do something different within the next 2 years. You know, I just went to a meeting in Florida on rheumatology and internal medicine, and two of the doctors there work for insurance companies now. You know, it's a very demanding profession and not always rewarding, internal medicine. I enjoy it because it's what I do. It's my passion. I love figuring out problems. But, you know, there's a strong physician burnout right now. And we're seeing less people go into primary care, more into specialties. And more primary care is being done now by nurse practitioners and PAs.
Right.
And I hear the patients complain that they don't get to see their doctors, but it's just part of the system now.
Right. Well, it sounds like there's a kind of an issue with the educational programs, too. And I mean, obviously, you know, both of us have a interest in supplements and other types of medicine. And none of that, of course, would be covered, I don't think, no. in the educational system. But more than that, when you talk about your daughter that has all this education, you know, what's the end reward for that? You know, and of course, this satisfaction of taking care of people and, you know, doing things that you love, but the obstacles that are out there created by the system and the insurance companies and all those pieces just make I can see why there's burnout. You know, in the healthcare field, it's overwhelming sometimes, and you know, I hear that from nurses as well, and particularly in a hospital setting or particularly in an ER. You know, it's a tough job.
And when you look at the ER now and the long waits, a lot of that, some is medical legal, you know, because of lawsuits, and everything is expected to be done. All right, so you come in, you have to get your CAT scan. If you don't do it, and if you potentially miss something, it's a lawsuit. You know, you have to do all your diagnostic tests. So because of that, it just backs everything up. And
increases costs. Yeah. Well, I have a daughter that works as an ER nurse, and she said that the doctors, particularly the new doctors, they order every possible test, and I think, you know, part of that's that legal aspect of, you know, covering all your bases. But then you have to wade through all the results of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
More time.
And time is that commodity that we all are short on.
Right. Yeah. It's a fixed number, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a fixed number.
So anything else on the things that we...
What are the positives? I mean, access to care, I mean, it's plentiful in this country. Every corner there's an urgent care. You know, is it the best care? It's a Band-Aid. You know, basically, you know, they'll treat your cold, they'll treat that, but they don't know you.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a part of medicine that I really enjoy. Yeah, I get to walk from room to room to room. You know, I get to see patients that I've invested. You know, we've walked together for 45, almost 50 years now.
Right.
And so I get to share in the treasure of their lives. And, you know, that's the golden part of medicine that so many people don't get to experience.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some physicians that miss that.
It's hard to see the patients you have to pay the bills and still to invest the time.
Yeah, so I do hear patients complain, you know, the doctor comes in, just spends a couple minutes, you don't hardly get to talk or whatever, but, you know, part of that, I don't know, that may be the individual style, but also part of it is the reimbursement model that the insurance company has set up for that, and so that certainly interferes with the time you can spend with a patient.
And it truly does. And, you know, I only work now Monday through Thursdays, and Fridays I spend looking at all the patients that are coming in the next week, and I take notes, and it helps me to prepare to review all the other doctors that they've seen, tests that they've done, just so I could do a better job. And it has been a much more enriching experience for me, and my patients definitely appreciate the time I get to spend with them. So when they leave the room, hopefully all their questions have been answered. And
right. Well, I know there's a lot of practitioners out there that do have those relationships and long-term relationships, particularly in family practice, I think. So it's a good thing. And we have seen physician burnout, and I've seen physicians resign because of insurance companies that dictated care, and they weren't able to provide the kind of care that they felt was what that person needed.
Yeah, it can truly lead to frustration. You can see that.
Yeah. And I've known, you can talk about the hours you put in. You know, probably the average surgeon is at least 60 hours a week. And, you know, most people are pretty happy with their 40-hour weeks, you know, so it makes it tough in terms of that. So we're coming up, I think we're coming up on, oh, we're not coming up on a break? I've got a few more minutes.
You got about a minute and a half.
All right, very good. So the medical economics are influencing things, the legal climate influences things. You know, nutritionals, products, you know, and people, you know, some people are great with the drug aspect, some people won't. Supplements or other things, you kind of integrate a lot of that together, I think.
Yeah, well, there are so many good ways to stay healthy, you know, and again, it's classic exercise and diet, you know, avoiding all those toxins, you know, the carbohydrates,
right,
inflammatory substances that they are, but there are very good supplements. You know, I have most of my patients on turmeric and magnesium.
Right. And yeah, well, now we are coming up on a break. We'll be back shortly. This is Fred Lauer. I'm talking to Dr. Sam Stout with Ardo Health Systems. Stay tuned. We've got one more section coming up.
Talk with Fred Lowry from Lowry Drug Company on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Local starts here.
Welcome back to Health Talk. I'm Fred Lowry here with Dr. Sam Stout. We're going to talk about statins a little bit. I am, my listeners know, not a big fan of statins for many reasons that I won't go into. But I do want to be open to learning what I can. And Dr. Stout, I think, has been involved in many studies related to statins. And I'd like to get your perspective on it, Sam, because, you know, I'm sure there are people out there that would benefit from a statin, although, you know, I think maybe it's overprescribed. These are my opinions. But anyway, tell us about statins and maybe your history in doing research in cardiovascular systems.
Well, statins, I think, came out about 25 years ago, if I remember. They were the first expensive drugs, the pravastatin and simvastatin. I think
right.
Pravastatin, when it came out, was $180 a month. So, you know, that was the beginning of takeoff on pharma, where prices did get expensive. But statins, actually, I'm a believer in statins, and I've been on a statin ever since it came out. You know, when I look at my family history, my father died of that sarcoidosis, but my grandfathers both had strokes and heart attacks in their late 50s, 60s, and 70s. So when statins came out, I was very interested in them. But truly, when you look at what causes heart disease, it's really not cholesterol. You know, it's inflammation. And inflammation is really what our American public is suffering from. It's a lot of our diet. You know, again, the carbohydrates, the refined right. sugars, the omega-6s, fast foods, you know, there's fast food on every corner. And in our busy, crazy lives, you know, that's an easy stop for a lot of people. But it's causing an awful lot of problems. So when you're looking at the inflammatory response, inflammation is, you know, heart disease is inflammation, and it's something called endocardial dysfunction. Blood vessels have three layers. You have an adventitia on the outside, a muscle layer, and an inner lining. The inflammatory process interrupts the endothelial lining, allowing the cholesterol to enter into it. And you get little liquid like the cholesterol, which with time the body will calcify and get hard plaque. But I became very interested in looking at cholesterol pretty intensely about 15 years ago, when looking at cholesterol molecule size. You know, cholesterol is not a liquid, it's a solid. And you want your cholesterol to be big and fluffy and your belly to be small and tight. Cholesterol is what everything is made of in your body. You know, it's the food for your membranes. It's what hormones are made from. It's what ubiquinol, Q10 is made from, testosterone, estrogens. Everything's made from cholesterol. So cholesterol is an important feeder. But we want a big, fluffy cholesterol for that. What determines the size of your cholesterol molecule are the sugars you eat, the fat you wear, the drugs you take, the exercise you do, and your genes. So when I look at cholesterol, I look at the cholesterol molecule size. I always like it greater than 223 angstroms. You know, diabetics have cholesterol 204, 206, 208. It's that small, rusted, oxidized cholesterol that causes the problem. So with the endothelial dysfunction, that's what interrupts that membrane and allows the cholesterol in and the liquid lakes of cholesterol to form. Liquid lakes of cholesterol last for about 6 weeks before the body starts to calcify it. If you have a lot of inflammation, which we can measure with a blood test called the CRPHS, that increases your chance for rupture of those liquid cholesterol plaques, you know, that are full of that oxidized cholesterol. When that liquid cholesterol lake gets exposed to the bloodstream, that's what starts a clotting cascade. The platelets grab hand, histamines are released, the vessel spasms, and you decrease sugar and oxygen flow to the tissue, which is what causes heart attacks and strokes. So when I'm looking at treating cholesterol, first I work on diet and exercise on people, you know, which is at times hard because people are very comfortable in their lives
right.
and don't always really, they want it to be done to them instead of their feet walking and doing something. So well, first you got to get them to do a buy-in, you know, to recognize that they are part of the problem. So And then I show them the molecule and how to change it. You know, we'll track it a couple times. You know, you can change cholesterol, you know, you can drop it in different ways. One, with the statin. Two, a drug called ezetimibe that binds cholesterol in the small bowel and just decreases your cholesterol number. And I will frequently do that first on people as I give them a chance to change it. You know, if they have cardiovascular disease in their family in the 40s and 50s, yeah, I'm trying to get them to do a buy-in. Following the cholesterol helps them to follow a number to see how they're changing their life path. So statins, well, when I use a statin, I talk to them about everything it affects. You know, it will drop something called pregnenolone,
right,
which is a precursor to progesterone and stuff that's very important for both men and female. It will drop your DHEA level, which is very important. It's anti-inflammatory in its own right, crosses the blood-brain barrier, decreases the risk for strokes, and it improves muscle mass, and it'll drop your testosterone level. And so when I put them on cholesterol drugs, I try to encourage those supplements, you know. But the most important thing that it drops, and I think one of the things that shows the bad effect of low cholesterol on some individuals is the CoQ10 or ubiquinol level.
Right.
And it's imperative that anyone on a statin be on 200 milligrams of that, because ubiquinol in its own right lowers your risk for heart attack and strokes.
Right.
And the last thing you really want to do is be dropping that level. So if you're cognitive of all the different side effects of the statin and you can correct that number, I see it as a safe drug. And I take all of those.
Right. Yeah, well, I had seen some physicians that were, you know, prescribing pregnenolone and DHEA, you know, along with the statin. I thought, you know, that's a great idea, really. And of course, the CoQ10, ubiquinol, we've talked about that for years. And I do remember when I first started talking about it, it wasn't a thing then. But
you're a thought leader in so many things, Fred.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So you feel in some cases the situation warrants it. You know, the statin is a good choice.
Diabetics especially, you know, because they're the ones. You know, a diabetic, just having diabetes, you're 3 to 6 times higher risk for a heart attack.
Right.
You know, you're higher risk for the first heart attack than someone is that's already had a heart attack for a second one. I mean, that's not a good statistic.
No, and obviously the food aspects of what you're talking about really is what created that diabetic picture, type 2 diabetes.
It's interesting when you look back on where heart disease really became popular was when Eisenhower had his heart attack. And we blamed it on all the fat that he was eating, and they didn't really look at the fact he smoked 4 packs a day. And so that's when we started using more high fructose corn syrup and
right.
Yeah, and more sugars in its place.
Now, going back to the large fluffy type LDL cholesterol and the more dense particles, which is what you don't want. Are most people testing for that, to look at that ratio?
I don't know. It's something I've done really since 2008.
What is that designation for that type of cholesterol?
It's a small LDL or oxidized LDL.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, that's good information, really, I think. And I think it, you know, I kind of chuckled. You talked about people that want something done to them, not them doing something for themselves, you know. And you know, that's one of the things I promote is self-responsibility, because, you know, if you put yourself in a bad health situation and you have to go to the doctor and have him fix it, you know, you really, it's helpful for you to take ownership of that. And in this day of time, you better be thinking about that, I think. Thank you so much for coming.
It's been a joy.
Yeah, maybe we can have you back. Thank you. This is Health Talk, and we'll be back next week.
Serving you better than ever before. WSIC, Statesville. W290DK, Mooresville. W264CU, Statesville.